From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
We have reached broad consensus and adopted a joint communique.
That was China's President Xi Jinping on Monday at the Belt and Road Summit, which China is hosting in Beijing.
The current forum is a high-level gathering of the international community with focus on the Belt and Road development. It has taken stock of the cooperation progress, built consensus, and charted the course for the Belt and Road cooperation with a roadmap and action plan.
Thus far, more than 68 countries, encompassing 4.4 billion people and up to 40% or more of the world's GDP, have been participating, with many more apparently seeking to opt in. The plans are ambitious, as China's president laid out.
This forum has sent a positive message to the rest of the world that we will work together to advance Belt and Road international cooperation and build a community of shared future for mankind.
Towards that end, Xi's policy recommendations were quite specific.
First, we all want to pursue both the development of our own countries and the common development of the world, and we have set the goals and direction of the Belt and Road cooperation. We are of the view that the development of the Belt and Road has come to a new stage of making progress on all fronts, as can be seen in greater policy coordination, faster implementation of major economic and trade projects, emerging infrastructure networks, enhanced trade and investment facilitation, steady progress in industrial and financial cooperation, and closer people-to-people ties. As our next step, we will build on what has been achieved, seek further progress of the Belt and Road efforts at a broader, deeper, and higher level, and work together to address major challenges facing the world economy. It is our hope that through the Belt and Road development, we will unleash new driving forces for economic growth, build new platforms for global development, and rebalance economic globalization so that mankind will move closer to a community of shared future. Second, we will champion the Silk Road spirit and stay committed to win-win cooperation. We agree that the Belt and Road Initiative is an open and inclusive platform for development, where all interested countries can participate, contribute, and benefit as equals. Under the principles of extensive consultation, joint contribution, and shared benefits, we will continue to move forward policy, infrastructure, trade, financial, and people-to-people connectivity. What we want is closer win-win cooperation through greater openness. We will not base cooperation on ideological ground, nor will we pursue any political agenda or make any exclusive arrangements. Third, we will continue to step up policy coordination and synergize our development strategies so as to pool our strength for coordinated development. We will coordinate our trade, investment, financial, and other macroeconomic policies, advance economic structural reforms, and foster an enabling international environment for development. We will synergize our development strategies and programs, work together to develop action plans, and provide policy support for major projects. We will work together to ensure an open world economy, advance FTA development, and promote trade and investment liberalization and facilitation. We reiterate the importance of innovation-driven development, support such innovation endeavors as cross-border e-commerce, big data, and smart city, and will jointly cultivate new industries, new business forms, and models. We also support greater complementarity between the Belt and Road Initiative and the development programs of other countries and those of international and regional organizations so that they will complement one another for coordinated development. Fourth, we have developed a roadmap for cooperation and identified priority areas and course of action. It is our hope that the Belt and Road Cooperation will help boost economic growth of all participating countries, improve their infrastructure, invigorate their industrial development, deepen financial cooperation, and intensify people-to-people exchanges. We agree that connectivity will remain a priority of our cooperation, and we will endeavor to connect overland passages with seaports and establish infrastructure networks of unimpeded land and sea routes. We will also step up soft connectivity, such as information sharing, mutual recognition of regulation, and mutual assistance in law enforcement, enhance cooperation in areas such as customs and quality inspection, and harmonize national rules and standards. We support an accelerated development of economic corridors, encourage more international cooperation on production capacity and equipment manufacturing, and call for the establishment of joint business and industrial parks and cross-border economic cooperation zones. We also support green and low-carbon development and a flourishing IT industry. We agree to expand financing channels, explore new ways of financing, lower financing costs, and put in place a stable and sustainable financial safeguard system to keep risk manageable. We support greater cooperation in areas such as education, science and technology, culture and healthcare, and encourage more exchanges in tourism and between think tanks as well as media organizations. We will take further steps to facilitate people-to-people exchanges. We will also work to meet people's expectations by expanding cooperation in such areas as sustainable development, fight against corruption, poverty reduction, and disaster mitigation. Fifth, we have advanced practical cooperation through the platform of the forum and achieved a series of positive outcomes, which further enhanced practical cooperation. Before and during the forum, China has concluded a number of documents and agreements on cooperation in the context of the Belt and Road Initiative with many participating countries and international organizations. Such cooperation ranges from planning for greater synergy of macro policies and development strategies to taking actions on the ground to facilitate trade, investment, and infrastructure connectivity, industrial and financial cooperation, and people-to-people exchanges. China, for its part, has announced a number of new decisions aimed at promoting policy synergy, accelerating the building of economic corridors, strengthening cooperation on major projects, and increasing financial support. These include contributing an additional 100 billion RMB to the Silk Road Fund and encouraging financial institutions to conduct overseas RMB fund business with an estimated amount of about 300 billion RMB. The China Development Bank and the Export and Import Bank of China will offer 250 billion RMB equivalent and 130 billion RMB equivalent of special credit lines, respectively, for cooperation projects under the Belt and Road Framework. The China International Import Expo will be held from 2018 that has been warmly welcomed by the participants. We have put together a list detailing more more than 270 major deliverables of the forum. These deliverables will effectively underpin the Belt and Road efforts, as they have boosted the confidence of all parties in enhanced cooperation. The discussions we have had at the forum reaffirm our belief that it serves our common interests to strengthen the Belt and Road cooperation and jointly address the challenges facing the world economy.
Another major player in the so-called Belt and Road project is the Russian Federation. Russia's President Vladimir Putin was in Beijing on Monday for the conference and took questions from the press.
Pavel Zarubin, TV channel Russia. It's a big event. It's been talked a lot about. What can be the impact of this initiative by China? What does it mean for Russia? First of all, it's a timely initiative. And here is why. As you know, we talk a lot behind the scenes. We exchanged opinions on the event, and almost everyone agrees that when the leading economic and political centers experience an increasing uncertainty, and we also see tense political tension, for example, in Europe, in the US, take the EU. Everyone's been following Brexit. No one knows the outcome, just like the initiative by China. And we hope that this could be a standing event. It could be an annual one. And the chairman of this conference, the leader of China, said that the next forum like this will take place in 2019. Will it be effective? We don't know yet. Time will show. But anyway, we are doing what we have set out in these documents. What do I mean by that? First off, we've been developing infrastructure together with our counterparts from other countries. You know, we have priority development areas. We have the port of Vladivostok as an exclusive economic zone. So we're trying to develop infrastructure. We've talked about transport infrastructure, railroad infrastructure, aviation infrastructure, seaport. And we also have some areas where we can cooperate. We talked about energy cooperation. You heard about the Asian power circle. This could become handy. As you know, we have overcapacity, especially in the eastern part of Russia. As for specific projects in energy, they've been implemented thanks to foreign investments, including Chinese investments. As for the Chinese Silk Road, you know, we have the LNG runs into dozens of billions of dollars, and that's just one project, and there are many more, and there will be many more. So it's a timely and very useful initiative, and I hope this will be very promising going forward.
During the forum and during your meetings with head of China, you said that the main event in the relations would be the visit of China's leader to Russia. Well, as we know from the words from a very famous Chinese politician, that one step is always important, but many steps are even more important. So what will be the next stops? It will be the dialogue on energy or the delivery of agricultural products, or maybe it's talks on the prices on energy products. So to achieve certain objectives before the visit, I should say that, have you been organizing it already?
We need to go back to the turnover volume we take this quarter. That's a 30% increase, almost 40%. That's been a lot of progress in this, but this is not the most important thing. We talk about figures in monetary value. They do have some significance, but this is not the most important thing. Now, what is important? Even during the period when we had a decline in terms of the amount of goods supplied, that remained the same. And for us, most important is the structure of the exports and imports. I think we're moving in the right direction. We are supplying a lot of engineering products, a lot of agriculture, and there's been a drastic increase in the amount of those goods. And that's been a trend for the past 2 or 3 years. And that's been very encouraging. We've also been cooperating the past 2 or 3 years. And that's been very encouraging. We've also been cooperating in high-tech sectors like space, aircraft building. We have a wide-body passenger jet that is being designed, and certainly an engine is critically needed. We don't have it yet. It's being designed. As you know, we have right now come up with the first engine for in 29 years. It's going to be a 35-ton propulsion engine. And we can now build our own wide-body passenger jet together with our Chinese partners. So it's a synergy effect that requires a combination of efforts from many industries and from science too. We also have a very successful cooperation in space. We can take it a step further, as we believe. We are going to supply our rocket engines to China. We also have cooperation in the military and the defense sector. And so we're seeing more and more high-tech cooperation in that area. So again, we have energy. It's one of the priority areas. I won't talk about it too much, but again, we have the strength of Siberia pipeline. It's on track. We don't have any disputes on pricing. As I mentioned, we will produce LNG together, and we'll also supply it to third country markets. Did you listen to Miller's report? We had 2.7 trillion cubic meters of gas on Yamal, and we also have 4.2 trillion. That's another 4.2 trillion. So, as you can see, we can supply enough gas for everyone.
TASS Agency. During this forum, there were certain messages on a rocket launch by North Korea. So, what is... How can you comment that threat?
Now, first off, again, we condemn any attempts for any countries to acquire nuclear arms. And that applies to North Korea, to the Korean Peninsula. Our position is well known. We are against this. We believe this is dangerous, counterproductive, and harmful. However, recently we saw attempts, and we saw interventions, invasions of foreign powers, regime changes, and certainly that provokes an arms race. So we need a comprehensive approach. We need to strengthen the system of international guarantees, relying on the UN Charter, relying on international law. Anyway, nuclear tests and missile tests are unacceptable. We have to go back to dialogue with North Korea. We need to stop intimidating North Korea. We need to find peaceful solutions to these problems. Is that possible? I believe so. We do have positive experience of constructive dialogue with North Korea. There was a point in time when North Korea said it will stop its nuclear program. However, patience wasn't there. But I think we have to go back to this. As for this particular test, Russia's defense minister reported about this to me. And again, you saw those comments in the mass media. So for us, it was no threat, but that is a provocation. That provokes an escalation. There's nothing good about it.
Егор Сазаев-Гурьев, Известия.
Известия. My question is on Syria. How can you comment on the current situation in Syria? Do you believe that the safe zones would be effective and efficient? And another detail, well, the Kurdish mass media in the northern part of Syria, they showed photos of Russian military specialists present at that part of the country. So, is Russia afraid of or not that that can lead to a certain negative reaction on the side of Turkey?
So I'll start with the final part of your question. We discussed this issue with the Turkish president. He expressed his concerns when we met in Sochi. And I told him, and I can tell you in public, there's no secret about it. Unlike other countries, we don't announce about arms supplies to the Kurdish forces. They have other sources that supply arms to them. We don't think that we need to step up these activities. But we know that the Kurdish factor is a real factor on the ground in Syria, and the Kurdish forces do take part in combat operations against the so-called Islamic State. And one of the most well-trained and efficient forces in that fight, we feel that it's in our right to support contacts with them, well, at least to avoid any clashes and conflicts and any threat to our military personnel. I don't think that there's anything that can raise concerns with our Turkish counterparts. We are in contact. Our position is open, and I hope that they will understand us. I heard about the statement of the Turkish president. He said that the United States announced that they're going to supply arms to Kurds. We have not done this. As for safety zones, I very much hope that this will be an efficient tool, first of all, to secure the ceasefire regime. This is the most important thing right now. We need to bolster the ceasefire regime, and then this will be the foundation for reconciliation and later on for a political process to kick in. If this is the scenario, then we could say we are moving in the right direction. But certainly, no effective political dialogue can start without a ceasefire. So how can we do it? Again, I'd like to thank Kazakhstan and the president of Kazakhstan, Nursultan Nazarbayev, for providing the platform for the talks in Astana. So we have achieved a ceasefire agreement there. Then we'll have meetings in Ankara, in Turkey, Russia, Iran, and Turkey. We'll discuss, certainly in consultations with the Syrian government, we'll discuss specific borders of those de-escalation zones, of those safety zones. And soon we'll talk about controls. Who will control what and where? These are very specific issues, and they will be discussed, but it's too early to speak about it in public.
Российская газета. On the 12th of May, the world saw an unprecedented cyber attack. More than 50 countries suffered, and Russian services and bodies, institutions and banks and companies also were targets. So what are the consequences of that attack, in your opinion? What can we do to prevent further attacks of that kind? And how can you comment on the fact that Russia being in the epicenter of the attack, in the eye of the storm? So some said that it was the hand of Kremlin, the hand of Russia, and Russia was behind that cyber attack.
We have not suffered any significant damage, either the banking or the health institutions, but overall, it's an alarming signal. There's nothing good about it, and certainly it raises concerns. As for the source of these threats, I think Microsoft's leader, Microsoft management, pointed to that. They said that the primary source is the U.S. security services. Russia has nothing to do with it. So it's strange to hear any other allegations. And this best reflects the realities. The reality is that everyone's always looking for someone to blame in those areas where there are none. Everyone's been trying to point the finger at innocence. Well, you know, last year we talked to our U.S. counterparts so that we could sign a cybersecurity agreement, but they declined our attempts. The previous U.S. administration then said, we can come back to it, but nothing was done in reality. So we see, you know, these dangerous attempts. As you can see, the security services create some kind of a Pandora box, and that could lead to negative consequences. We need to start developing solutions to counter this threat at the political level.
My question is about the domestic situation. Well, Chinese government said that all state companies should pay 50% of their profit. Well, would it?
It's just being discussed.
I thought there is a draft project.
You just have a draft resolution, but it's not effective.
So Rosneft company, they are kind of excluded from that, but there is a Gazprom company. They work with China, they work on the strength of the Siberia pipeline, so they were excluded from that process. They were paying less than others. So this year, is there any reason behind getting rid of some additional taxes on them?
You know, we will move on to the international financial reporting system. We also have Russian accounting standards. If we take the IFRS, the Gazprom has a lot of top line, but it's just on paper. They don't have the real cash flow. So I guess the government will take into account the realities on the ground and not just the paper revenues. So I guess this will be the most important factor. We just discussed this with the government before I left for Beijing. So they do have a lot of revenues on the IFRS before taking the decision.
Lentaru, we're saying much about the economy these days, and China is truly a powerful economy. They have very ambiguous plans. So are you concerned that all that is planned for the One Belt, One Road will be implemented, and this way China will just take into its orbit Russia too? Can we resist that?
Russia is not a country that is can be afraid of anything. The actions of China are not to absorb anything. We take all decisions together, and we won't take any decisions to our detriment. We would only agree to those solutions, that would benefit us. And if that helps to develop our economy, what's bad about it? Russia is ready to cooperate with any country, and China has demonstrated the same level of transparency and openness around the world.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.